on this Sunday night. Historic visit. President Obama in Havana tonight, symbolically opening a new era in U.S. relations with Cuba as some carry on the fight against a still repressive regime. Trail of violence, the new confrontations at Donald Trump's campaign events. We speak to a protester who found himself being punched and kicked. Distracted driving, it may have been what caused the crash that toppled a school bus carrying a high school basketball team. Remarkably, everyone survived. And, dear Mr. President, one woman's letter from Havana gets a response from President Obama. Now, she hopes he'll stop by for a thank you and a coffee. Nightly news begins right now.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, reporting tonight from Havana.
Good evening from a rainy Havana. Behind me, the Museum of the Revolution. Just a few hours ago, this communist nation welcomed President Obama, who, stepping onto Cuban soil under a falling rain, became the first American president to visit here in 88 years. As part of his two-day trip, the president will meet with Cuban leader Raul Castro and even make an address to the Cuban people, hoping to further nudge open the doors of travel and commerce 8 months after the two nations reestablished diplomatic ties. But there are years of mistrust to unravel and an American economic embargo still in place. Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell joins me now with more on the day.
Andrea. Good evening, Lester. What a day it has been. President Obama has been working toward this day for years. An historic presidential visit he hopes will make his opening to Cuba a major part of his legacy.
In driving rain, President Obama touched down in Havana, hoping to cement his high-stakes Cuba diplomacy with a rare personal touch, bringing the entire first family, Michelle Obama, the Obama daughters, and his mother-in-law. He immediately tweeted in local slang, "How's it going, Cuba? Que bola, Cuba?" Just touched down here, looking forward to meeting and hearing directly from the Cuban people. Cuba has been painting, crimping, repaving roads for weeks. Security is intense.
It's been nearly 90 years since a U.S. president stepped foot in Cuba. It is wonderful to be here. This is a historic visit, and it's a historic opportunity to engage directly with the Cuban people.
On this Palm Sunday, the president is visiting the cathedral in Old Havana, thanking the country's Cardinal Ortega, who, with Pope Francis, helped broker secret talks between President Obama and Cuba's President Raul Castro. Also coming here, CEOs to sign deals for hotels, banking, and internet service. To boost business, the president lifted restrictions so Americans can travel here more easily. Times are changing since a young Fidel Castro launched his revolution, and the U.S. retaliated with an economic boycott. But more than a half century of suspicion dies slowly. A weekly silent women's protest against the regime was disrupted today by counter-protesters. Arrests on both sides. The U.S. and Cuba still disagree over free elections and free speech. Some Cubans have moved to Canada, but now see business opportunities. If I may ask, why did you leave Cuba?
It was more about the way the country works, the way the country's run. It was more about the limitations and the laws.
And even without widespread internet, Harold Cardenas, a young blogger, is hopeful.
The initial fights between both our countries, many of them are not relevant anymore. And my generation doesn't have to pay for all grudges.
Overshadowing this visit, Cuba's frustration with the U.S. economic embargo, which Congress refuses to lift, and worry that if a Republican is elected, all of President Obama's changes will be reversed. Another reason why the president will press Cuba hard this week to speed up the pace of change. Lester.
All right, Andrea, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Upon arrival here in Cuba, I spoke with Washington's top diplomat in Havana, Jeffrey De Laurentiis. We met at the U.S. Embassy, which for decades was known as the U.S. Interest Section, and which many here saw as a symbol of American resolve to undermine the communist government. I asked the ambassador what it stands for now.
I would like to think that it stands for a beacon of hope, a beacon of opportunity, the American way of life. It's about reconciliation. It's about bringing people back together and looking to the future with a much more productive relationship, but also one where we can have frank discussions about ideas and issues where we do not agree, such as human rights.
Do you have any disappointment in the Cuban government's pace of changes? There's still a lot of issues in terms of private investment, private sector here?
We'd like to see them move faster in a variety of different areas. But I think we have to be patient. Again, we're changing a relationship that had gone in one direction for a long time.
Then there's the issue of the dissidents, which continue to be jailed, and many people think that having the president come here is almost a reward, an undeserved reward for the Cuban government. How do you respond to that?
Well, the reestablishing of diplomatic relations is not an award. We feel strongly that advocating for and promoting U.S. interests and values can be best achieved through engagement.
And as someone who has deep experience in this country, do you ever find yourself looking past the Castros and what the future of this country might be?
There will be a leadership change in February of 2018. President Castro has said he will step down. And so we'll see in the upcoming Party Congress next month if there's any hint to what the transition might look like. But things are moving on, and we'll have to see. I'm optimistic that we can make this relationship a more productive one that benefits Americans and benefits Cubans alike.
Ambassador Jeffrey De Laurentiis, chief of mission here in Cuba. Despite improving relations, some Cubans are still trying to leave their country, and some are dying in the process. The U.S. Coast Guard says 9 Cuban migrants died at sea, and 18 others were rescued by a cruise ship. They were found on a boat on Friday, 130 miles west of Marco Island in southwest Florida. Many Cubans are making the journey now out of fear that the U.S. law that for years has given Cubans special immigration status will change as relations with Cuba improve. New concerns were raised this weekend about violence at Donald Trump's campaign event, specifically how his campaign and security staff are responding to protesters. The latest incident came last night, and today Trump defended what took place. Our Gabe Gutierrez has this report.
This weekend, the anger boiled over.
Are you pushing me?
In Tucson, a protester in a white hood escorted out by police. Another one behind him repeatedly punched and kicked by men in the crowd. That protester, Brian Sanders, spoke with NBC's Jacob Rascone.
This political movement has gotten to the point where you may get beat to death inside of a rally. I just got my kicked.
But it's this video that's raising even more questions. Trump's campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, appears to grab the collar of another protester who's yanked away by a member of Trump's private security. Today, Trump strongly defending him.
Security at the arena, the police were a little bit lax, and he had signs. They had signs up in that area that were horrendous. I will give him credit.
Last week, a reporter from the conservative website Breitbart filed a police complaint accusing Lewandowski of assault, but he's not been charged. The longtime GOP operative once took a break from politics to work as a New Hampshire state police officer.
It's very unusual, unprecedented for a campaign manager to be out in the crowd, being involved in security.
Ted Cruz campaigning in Arizona.
There is now only one campaign in a position to beat Donald Trump and win the Republican nomination.
Polls show he trails Trump there, but leads in Utah, getting some unlikely support from the so-called establishment. John Kasich betting on a contested convention.
Listen, nobody's going to that convention with enough delegates, and at the end, you know why I'll get picked? Because I can win in the fall.
Amid reports of a 100-day Stop Trump campaign in the works, tonight here in Florida, the frontrunner spoke to local GOP leaders.
Tomorrow, Trump will leave here and head to Washington to speak at the AIPAC conference. Some of those attending are planning to walk out because of Trump's previous controversial comments about immigration and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Lester.
All right, Gabe Gutierrez tonight. Thank you. Officials in Belgium said today that the newly captured suspect in the Paris terrorist attacks may have been planning more violence. They hope to learn from him about what happened in Paris and the broader threat from ISIS inside Europe. Our Keir Simmons reports from Brussels.
Salah Abdeslam, arrested amid gunfire and explosions, may have been planning another attack.
He was ready to restart something from Brussels, and it's maybe the reality because I said we have found a lot of weapons, heavy weapons.
But it's his knowledge of the Paris massacre last November that may be crucial.
Since Salah Abdeslam was discovered in this building in Brussels,
he has been talking, and there are many questions surrounding the attacks in Paris that he could answer.
The explosives used in the Paris attacks, TATP, require an experienced bomb maker. Who was he, and where is he? According to the New York Times, which says it has seen a police report, French investigators describe Salah Abdeslam as the logistics guy. So can he detail the original plan? While reports confirmed by NBC News reveal the suspected ringleader, Abdelhamed Abayoud, hid in bushes for 3 nights after the attacks. Had something gone wrong? Ultimately, he died during a Paris police raid, leaving Abdeslam as the only known living member of the Paris cell. How much does he know?
The people running the operation of ISIS are extremely professional, and I don't see those people sharing all the information.
Abdeslam relied on a large network of friends to stay hidden, the Belgian prosecutor said. The continuing and most urgent question tonight, how many more ISIS operatives are on the run in Europe? Keir Simmons, NBC News, Brussels.
Officials in Indiana are investigating whether a distraction caused a woman to drive her car into a school bus carrying a high school basketball team this weekend. The bus rolled over, but remarkably, everyone survived. Steve Patterson has details.
A startling scene that seemed tragic.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
A school bus on its back, half crushed, on board 27 passengers, members of the Griffith High School basketball team heading to the big state tournament. Their hoop dreams sideswiped by a seemingly distracted driver. Police say in the next lane, the 23-year-old driver lost the lid on her drink, spilling it and losing control of her car, swerving it right into the side of the bus.
Then my buddy's on the ground, can't move, can't walk. It really hurt.
Mark Katawaki, a surgeon from North Carolina who happened to be driving by, stopped to help.
Honestly, even as a trained health professional, you see an upside-down school bus, it's every parent's worst nightmare, and you... A fear goes through your horror.
Police are investigating the crash and no one has been charged. Remarkably, no one suffered life-threatening injuries. Today, a prayer service in thanks instead of mourning.
The prayers have been answered, obviously, because we all walking and we all talking, which matters.
Not exactly the homecoming they were planning, but one they'll gladly accept.
We're going to try to recuperate so we could bring a state ring possibly back here. That's the main goal.
And with big dreams still to strive for. Steve Patterson, NBC News.
On this first day of spring, we're watching a winter storm as it brings snow to parts of the Northeast this evening and into tomorrow. Let's get the latest from our meteorologist, Dylan Dreyer. Hello, Dylan.
Hi, Lester. We have winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings across the Northeast, especially across New England, where we'll see most of our higher snowfall totals. This storm will strengthen out over the water overnight. The Mid-Atlantic just getting brushed by the western side of this storm. Then as we go through the morning, southern New England will see heavy pockets of snow. Then it moves up into down east Maine by early afternoon Monday. New York area, just about an inch on the grassy surfaces. The farther east you go, though, the higher the snowfall totals will be, as much as 6 to 10 inches across southeastern Massachusetts, up into down east Maine. Washington, D.C., New York, I don't really see a whole lot of travel troubles early tomorrow morning, but you head up into New England, we could see troubles up until about noontime. Then this whole storm system will race away by the time we go into Sunday afternoon. Lester?
All right, Dylan. Suddenly this rain doesn't seem so bad around us. When Nightly News continues on this Sunday, they made it to Italy, but we'll tell you why these migrants still feel dangerous close by. And later, from here in Havana, meet a woman who has already heard from President Obama and is now hoping he'll stop by for a visit and some coffee. Some street scenes here in Havana earlier today before the rain moved in. Overseas, as the migrant crisis plays out in Europe, some of those who have come in search of a better life and often to escape violence have found refuge and work in the fields of Italy, working lands that it turns out have a notorious and violent connection of their own. We get more from Sicily and Bill Neely.
In the dark heart of Sicily, near the mafia stronghold of Corleone, new muscle works the land. Migrants have taken over vineyards confiscated from jailed mafia bosses. They fled violence and poverty at home to work in a place that's known for both. But here they are paid, fed, and clothed.
Many, though, are afraid to be identified, afraid of mafia vengeance.
From time to time, you feel a bit scared.
Yeah, sometimes I feel scared.
You're looking over your shoulder.
I am alone here. Maybe sometime we fear.
Many migrants already know mafia, or at least the word. It's originally Arabic, meaning a place of refuge, which is what they have here. Safety in mafia country. For now. Hired from refugee camps, they now live in houses once owned by mafia leaders, like Toto the Beast Rina.
Rina Salvatore.
Jailed for dozens of murders, men who may one day want their land back.
I try to protect the guys, I try to protect myself.
In Corleone, they sell the wine from the migrants' vineyard, but not everyone's buying. Mafia ties run deep here, and Sicily's war against the mob is far from won. The mayor of the capital compares the mafia to ISIS. He's heavily guarded, supports the migrants, loathes the mafia.
I am the boss of Palermo against the boss of the mafia.
But the mafia is not dead.
The mafia is not dead.
Hundreds more migrants landed in Sicily in recent days. Authorities want more of them in the mafia's old killing fields. The godfathers behind bars can do little as the migrants work their land and watch their backs. Bill Neely, NBC News, Corleone, Sicily.
And up next here tonight, they're a family of four now, the newest arrival in the Eagle's Nest in Washington. The scene at the National Arboretum in Washington earlier this morning as a second baby bald eagle emerged from its shell, the moment captured on a live video stream. The parents are known as the President and the First Lady, and one of them was seen feeding the new arrival, who came after a first eaglet hatched on Friday. The young birds are expected to remain in the nest for 12 or 13 weeks. Think about the sun. Now imagine a group of stars at least 100 times more massive. An international team of scientists say they have identified such a cluster of stars, nine of them using NASA's Hubble Space Telescope. Needless to say, these monster stars are very far away in a cluster known as R136. NASA says they are also far brighter than the sun. And two emerald green comets are expected to make relatively close encounters with our planet. The first will fly within 3.3 million miles of Earth tomorrow morning. The second will be just 2.2 million miles away on Tuesday. While that may seem still far off, we're told it will be the closest a comet has come to our world since 1770. Pope Francis celebrated Palm Sunday Mass today before tens of thousands of people in St. Peter's Square. He highlighted the plight of refugees flooding into Europe. A picture of the Pope carrying a woven palm branch appeared on his new Instagram account. Since joining this weekend, the Pope has become an instant Instagram star with 1.4 million followers. And when we come back here tonight, we'll visit a woman here in Havana who would just love to make the president a good cup of Cuban coffee. Classic cars, some of the moving tourist attractions here in Havana. Finally tonight, President Obama's visit to this island has deep meaning to many ordinary Cubans who until now could only dream of the historic changes unfolding before them. They include a woman in Havana who has exchanged letters with the president and is hoping to thank him personally. Chris Jansing has her story tonight.
In the well-used kitchen of her Havana home, Ileana Yarza honors Cuban tradition.
Sugar or no sugar?
By making a strong, rich cup of Cafe Cubano for visitors.
You really have a wonderful coffee.
A practice run, perhaps, in case her dream guest ever comes.
How many letters have you written to him?
Five.
Starting in 2008, when Barack Obama was first running for president, Ileana sat down at her computer to write.
I just want to ask you to please lift the embargo.
Then, on election night 2008, a real rarity in Cuba, Ileana was able to watch the results on television and report back to her family.
I heard you opened a very expensive bottle of champagne.
Is that true? It is.
And she wrote more letters.
Mr. President, I heard last night that
in her last one, a thank you for opening the diplomatic door to Cuba and an invitation to open her own.
Please, please do visit me. Give this 76-year-old Cuban lady the gift of meeting you personally.
Like the other letters, she never expected President Obama to read it, but he did.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
A response came, hand-delivered, and as an official White House photo shows, it was signed by the president himself. He wrote, I hope this note, which will reach you by way of the first direct mail flight between the United States and Cuba in over 50 years, serves as a reminder of a bright new chapter in the relationship between our two nations. No mention, though, of Ileana's other request.
I insist that you, if you ever go to Cuba, please do come here and have some coffee.
And if he does come, he'll find Ileana's Café Cubano is a lot like she is, delightful and sweet and good.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's good coffee.
That's good coffee.
And by the way, she says he should bring his family.
My heart is hoping. My heart is always very optimistic. Perhaps my brain is not, but the heart is.
Chris Jansing, NBC News, Havana, Cuba.
A cup sounds real good right about now. That's NBC Nightly News for this Sunday. I'm Lester Holt, reporting from Cuba. I'll be right back here tomorrow night for all of us here at NBC News. Thank you for watching, and have a good night.